Hey, by the way, special thanks to those of you listening to us on our huge affiliate in New York, WOR 710 AM. Thank you so much. You know, we've been on the station for just a little bit more than a month, and already you have propelled us almost to the number one rating in New York, which is absolutely remarkable. When you make a switch to another station, these things take time, and you have pushed us to just unbelievable. Truly unbelievable. So thank you so much. And we are in that overnight slot, the top number one rated talk station in New York. So we're on our way there. So thank you so much. Just keep doing what you're doing. And so will we. Anyway, we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM with your phone calls and stories with Dr. Claude Swanson on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We've got Claude Swanson. We've got you and your stories as well. You've looked a little bit at the dousing and how it works. Let's get your thoughts on that, Claude, before we go to calls.
Sure. Over the years, I've come to know some very good dowsers, Louis Matasia, Walt Woods, and Raymond Grace among them. And it's always amazed me what a good dowser can do. I used to think that they were sensing the mineral energy under the ground, and that's true in some cases. But a lot of dowsing uses maps alone. I had a friend who was a former Exxon executive building a refinery in Puerto Rico, and he used a map dowser in Paris. The fellow used high-resolution maps, never left his apartment, as far as I'm aware, and only got paid when he was successful. And he was very successful, quite wealthy. When he located water, it was very high density sources, very rich sources of water. So that got my attention to the idea that dowsing does not have to use energies that are sensible. But my best theory for dowsing is that it's really a psychic process. And that it's based on the muscle tension in the body, which is part of our parasympathetic system. And when you're asking yes, no questions, and if you're getting a no and a no and a no, and all of a sudden you get a yes,
that's right.
Actual changes the structure of the muscle tension in the body, and your dowsing instrument, pendulum or L-rods, et cetera, are just an amplifier. They show that change. So that's my...
Yet something goes through your body to give you that, I think, knowledge unknowingly.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So this is our aura. This is our higher dimensional energies in the body that affect the muscle tension through that connection.
All right, let's go to the phones. We'll go to Richmond, Virginia to get things going. Josie, you are on Coast to Coast. Hi, Josie.
Hello, Claude, and hello, George.
Hi.
Hi, Josie.
I missed you at the X conference.
I was there.
No, you were there, George, but Claude wasn't.
You're talking to Claude. Sorry. Sorry, George.
Well,
I'll leave the room.
I saw
now.
You there, yeah. That's true. Well, anyhow, I lost track of your phone number, Claude. You know, Claude and I are friends.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that explains it.
So, you know, you'll have to call me. Anyhow, I'm...
Josie, can I interject for a second? Josie and I met at the Bruton Parish dig, which is a very interesting little side story you might want to tell him about, or some of the time, maybe.
Go ahead, tell him, Joe.
Well, there's a controversy about Shakespeare's papers. Who was Shakespeare? Who wrote the papers, et cetera? And their Manly Palmer Hall's wife wrote a very interesting book proposing that Sir Francis Bacon was involved in this small group who actually wrote the plays. And there was some evidence based on cryptography and cryptograms in the Bruton Parish churchyard to argue that those papers might be buried in a vault there. So this had to do with an expedition, an archaeological expedition.
Uh-huh.
And that's how we met.
Super. Well, go ahead, Josie.
And the funny thing is that it was such a controversy, and my cousin was the lawyer for the church. I mean, the whole thing was And all these New Age people popped out of there. Some of them, one of them, and I really smelled bad. I mean, there was all this.
Claude, I feel like I'm listening in on a private conversation here.
Well, I mean, it's a good story anyway, no matter who's listening in.
But just a few of us.
I just have a short little story of going to the X conference during this time of Mercury retrograde, which I think is probably the worst Mercury retrograde period that I have ever witnessed, starting with all of that ash falling in April, and then going through all of these events that have happened in the earth changes with floods and earthquakes and you name it, and the oil spill. But the earth, it was just about to go retrograde. Here I was on the road late for the first party because of various other little delays that happened. And I pray before I get on the highway. I just put light around me, around the car and down the road ahead. And then unless I have need of one, may there be no policeman around, a little thing like that. And usually that works just fine, except, I was bombing down the highway at about 90-some miles an hour.
Jeez.
And as soon as I saw the policeman, it was too late. And when he approached me, though, it was the attitude was. So, you know, I think there's an effect to the prayer, even though, yes, there was a policeman and did stop me. And he saw that I had a just expired inspections ticket, and he was pleasant to deal with, and we had a nice exchange of conversation. And he then offered me a choice of either
jail
the speeding
or
ticket, or a ticket for the expired inspection. And of course, I chose the expired inspection, which was a lot better deal than to choose going
90, you know. Yeah.
And so I thought that maybe I needed to be stopped. I always figure that I'm at a place, wherever it is I'm supposed to be is where I'm supposed to be, you know. And I kind of think that these little things have a – and by the way, Claude, I want to thank you for helping me understand about the scientific method. I really, when we and I had conversations, I knew nothing about scientific method and all of that, and I, you know, grown to know and understand and appreciate that a lot more than I did in the past. Of course, we all get a little more wisdom as we get past, say, 60 years old. You're almost there, George. Not yet.
Oh, I'm knocking on the door, Josie. But you know what? I think you somehow summoned up the police officer. And you know how sometimes that happens, Claude. You think about it, you know what you're doing,
yep.
And all of a sudden, boom, there go the results. I think people do it to themselves.
Yep.
Josie, thanks for the call. Next up, we'll go to Kevin in Omaha, Nebraska, first-time caller. Kevin, go ahead. You're on with us.
Yes, George, Kevin. I'm first-time caller. Love your show.
Thank you.
Sorry, I'm actually going to bring it back when you guys were talking about the Big Bang Theory.
Sure.
One thing, I don't know if any of you, either of you, have read the book by Scott M. called God's Debris.
Yes.
Yes. Now, that book had a really interesting theory on it. It was basically stating, you know, in most religions, how there's an omnipotent God, meaning, you know, he could create anything, do anything. He's all powerful. And so a God of that power would easily get bored because nothing would be a challenge to him. So if you think about it, what would be a challenge to him? And basically what it's coming up with is he would try to attempt to destroy himself.
And
that would be the only.
Well, you know, you're right. And also that philosophy in his work was that the simplest explanation is always the best explanation. That's what I got out of that. You too?
Yes, I agree. And I just found it really interesting because, I mean, an omnipotent God would probably get bored, and if there was an omnipotent God, it would be a challenge to destroy yourself. And what it's saying is, when he did that, it created everything. And every time a soul passes, it's just himself bringing himself back together.
Do you find, Claude, that wrestling with science, with what you now know, you're in conflict with yourself?
Well, let me argue with myself about that for a second.
Yeah.
I think that for me, curiosity and the desire to understand is probably dominant. So as long as I'm on the path of trying to learn and trying to figure it out, it doesn't really bother me to not have the final answer. I'm still looking. So I, you know, I'm sure there's conflict that goes on there, but I don't feel troubled by it. I think I'm probably more troubled when there are people who seem so sure they have the answer and they don't want to look, especially when there's, you know, really blatant examples to indicate that they don't have the final answer. So as long as we're on the path, it doesn't bother me too much.
Okay, well, that's fair enough. Mary Michael in Mill Creek, Utah, west of the Rockies. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have a question for Claude.
Okay.
Well, a quick story and a quick question.
Let's go with the story first.
Okay. First of all, I've always been able to see auras since I was 5. My parents sent me to a psychiatrist. But anyway, I was healing my husband one time. He had a kidney stone that was 5 centimeters, couldn't go up or down, so they had scheduled emergency surgery. I had been working on him with energy healing, and when he was at the hospital, he'd been given the drug, but they hadn't cut him open yet, and they were trying to find it, and it was gone, and the doctor was so frustrated, he said, "Where is it?" My husband, you know, being drugged, said, "Well, maybe my wife took it." So, but my question is, and I also have healed cancers, things like that, but my main question is about the field that you were talking about. I've been able lately to see through solid objects.
Mm-hmm.
When it first happened, I was just kind of amazed. You know, you see the outline of a solid object, but you can see through it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this could be part of the torsion field that you have been discussing.
It could be. Could very well be that you're, because we all have torsion fields as part of our own body's energy, and the more we're sensitive to that field, then the more we can pick up the torsion field outside the body. So, that would make sense to me.
Okay, so it's nothing to worry about. I've tried covering one eye than the other, and it doesn't seem to
I think
be.
That's really wonderful. I have a couple of other friends who have been sort of learning these skills, too, and I get little updates every so often. I think it's really wonderful.
Claude, you've looked at crop formations. How do you tie that into some of the things you've researched?
First of all, I think the crop circles were the first time I experienced subtle energy directly. I'd done a little bit of Reiki and trying to feel energy around the body, so I had a little bit of practice, but in crop circles, that energy is amplified. The crops are created and formed in a way to create subtle energy patterns that your body responds to, so the torsion field in your body can feel, and sometimes in some formations, it's almost like a force that pushes against you or pushes toward you. In other cases, it just activates higher energy consciousness. So I had the feeling and that these patterns are created to educate us about subtle energy, to make us more sensitive to it. And what I came away with is the realization that they are very much like the much older temples that are in that part of England, because there's a certain part of England where most of the crop circles still occur. And it happens that there are ley lines in the ground, there are underwater water formations, and certain other formations that make the conduction, the carrying of subtle energy, it's very easy to work with it there. And so the old temples, like Stonehenge and like Avebury, take advantage of those patterns of energy, and the crop circles do as well. So to me, that just opened me up to this whole big question of the energy in the land, the sacred energy, sacred sites in the land. And once I was aware of it, then I realized, well, gee, these things have been around for thousands of years. There were cultures building these stone monuments thousands of years ago,
And in fact, you find them all around the world. So this knowledge of qi is not a modern thing. It's a very ancient thing, and we're just kind of waking up to it. And so crop circles helped wake me up to it.
All right, let's go to Ken in Chesaning, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hey, Ken, go ahead.
Hi, George. Hi, Claude.
Hi.
I had a quick story and a quick question, if I could, please.
Sure.
When I was earlier in life, you know, I always had, you know, these feelings, so on and so forth, where, you know, events that came true, so on and so forth. Later on in life, I had two close head injuries, and they was in heightened from the injuries. My question to you on this particular theory that you have is, do you think that Tesla also carried some of them theories, and how long is this information going to be suppressed and put away in different formats? Because truly the shamans and the Orientals and the Asian culture has carried all that information with them, and it's just taken this long, how long, for the Western civilization to come to knowledge about a lot of this. I'll take my answers up there if I could.
Okay.
Well, I believe, and I certainly hope, that we're at that point where it's starting to happen. Right now, not only do you have all of the torsion work that's going on in Russia, but the Germans have been more and more sensitive to it. The Eastern Europeans know about as much as the Russians do about it. So it's kind of spreading from Asia across Europe toward us. At this point, there are bioenergy devices, various types of healing devices that have come out of Germany and Russia that use torsion. So they're making inroads into this country in that way. And I think what we really need are some good torsion measuring devices, something practical that can measure torsion levels accurately. There are several devices that are technologies that exist that can measure torsion, but right to this point, they're not really very convenient. So I think if we could get a good device, I think that would probably open this up for the scientists and engineers to take a serious look at it.
And we need more and more scientists like you, Claude, to look at this. We're just not getting enough, are we?
Not yet. but I'm hopeful. I'm optimistic.
Well, I hope that happens, too. We'll be back. We'll take final phone calls in just a moment with Dr. Claude Swanson. Website linked up at coasttocoastam.com, synchronizeduniverse.com. And, of course, his latest work is called Life Force. And this is through the mind of a physicist now. That's the important thing. He's not someone who's just practicing. He's an actual scientist who believes that there is such things as psychokinesis, teleportation, out-of-body experiences, and the use of that field. So we'll be back with Dr. Claude Swanson, your final questions, your final stories, in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, Mark Zakri joins us as we talk about sci-fi on Coast to Coast AM. And John Van Auken, he joins us on our next Coast to Coast program as we talk about Edgar Cayce, prophecies, and you do not want to miss it. We'll be back in a moment with final calls with Dr. Claude Swanson on Coast to Coast AM. Claude, explain to us what a ley line is.
You know, ley lines were not really known until about 100 years ago in the West, when aerial photographers began noticing these straight-lined features that old landmarks like churches and stone circles tended to fall on a line. Oftentimes there were marks in the countryside that all seemed to fit on these straight lines. Dowsers found that dowsing was the best way to locate them, but it looks as though they're very, very ancient. They're probably thousands of years old, and they carry the subtle energy, the qi current, through the ground. And they were probably built by ancient societies that, for whom the flow of this energy in the landscape was a really important part of life. You can go to the Chinese, like the Feng Shui masters. That's what they do. They control the flow of the qi energy in the landscape. That type of skill apparently existed in many countries, including England and the Southwest. The Native Americans have stone circles and similar design. So in old times, they thought a lot about how to make that energy flow in the land to help keep our societies healthy and happy and prosperous.
Well, you know, have you heard of Edward Leitz calling down at Coral Castle?
Yes, I've been down there.
Okay, fascinating.
Yes.
And he, I believe, built that on a ley line.
Didn't know that. I've been down there, and I've puzzled about it, but I don't have any answers. He was amazing.
He tied into it. Let's go to the final calls. Let's go to Maui in Hawaii. Joan, you're on Coast to Coast. Hi, Joan.
Aloha to you.
Aloha
and
to you,
Johnson.
Too. Sure thing.
Hey, I got to tell you, I'm a longtime listener, and I've never called in before, so I'm going to do my best, but my heart is just about to leap out of here this evening, and I said, I know I have to tell the story. It's about an angelic it's a phenomenal paranormal experience that I had related to driving about 15 years ago. I was visiting my family on the mainland and had taken, I have three siblings there. All of them have children, and I had each taken one child from each of my siblings with me to the reunion. It was out of state, out in Kansas. Drove up there on the turnpike. We had a great time in the reunion on the weekend. And so the night at the end of the reunion that night, we were all tired, but had to get up early the next morning to get back on the turnpike and get home, and I had to catch a flight back to Hawaii. So I had everything planned out, had a lot of extra time and all that, but I think long story short, all the three kids were asleep, and I was trying to go to sleep, but I kept having this vision of a terrible car accident.
Oh, geez.
And this went on for about an hour. I tried everything I knew. I got up, walked around, you know, I prayed, I did all that. And so finally I said, well, duh, just put the white light around it. So I did do that, and I was able to go to sleep immediately. Well, I got up, we got up about 5 in the morning, wanted to leave early. Everything was ready. Got the kids in the car all strapped in and everything. They were about 10, 12, and 14, their ages. We got on, got out there, got on the turnpike, and I don't know how many miles it was into the turnpike, maybe 20 miles, and was going whatever the speed limit was, and came up over the crest of a little hill, an elongated hill, and there was an overpass ahead. Right beyond the crest of that little hill, there was debris from a car accident.
Mm.
Making me shake to say it again. I'll do my best, but there was a bumper that was all... It was kind of crinkled up, and other pieces, I think there was a tire and other pieces of the car laying there on the road, and I thought, oh, my God, there's no way I can get over that. You know, if I swerve, I'm going to turn, roll the car.
Sure.
And if I keep going straight, I'm going to hit it, and it's going to flip me over. And I said, oh, I'm going to wipe out somebody in my, you know, in my family from each of my brothers and sisters, and it just got to me. I thought, we're out, we're gone. And the thing of it is, it happened so fast that I didn't know what happened until I looked behind me, and I had somehow gone through that and ended up on the other side of the underpass. In the meantime, under the underpass was the wrecked vehicle. Very dark. It was 5 or 5:30 in the morning. The car was sitting there very quiet, and I had an ominous feeling that there was nobody in there alive. So I found myself right beyond the overpass at that time. I pulled to the side to get myself together, and I was trying to think, what am I going to do here? I've got these three kids in the car. I need to go back and investigate that. I was quite in a quandary, and about that time I saw three cars come up to the underpass. They were coming from the other direction, and they stopped to help, but I felt it was just quite an experience to know that, how did I come across there? And I haven't told this to many people because I don't know why. I think I just tried to get through it at the time. The kids, one of them woke up and said, what's going on? And I said, I don't know what just happened. But thank God somebody was watching over us. How we went through that, I don't know. The car, the that I was driving had not been hit by any debris. We had not bounced. There's just no way we could have gone over that bumper, especially.
That's another one of these cases. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's just like the other story, Claude. Isn't
yeah,
it
absolutely.
Amazing?
You know, the fellow on the front of my book, Rich Berry, who is a spiritual advisor and an old remote viewing friend of mine, who has had this habit, this ability to give me advice about future science, and he's quite clairvoyant. I had something like that with a car he was driving that would not shift into the lower gears, and he had very little money. I'm trying to get back to a 700-mile trip back to Missouri, and he was really sweating it, and a friend of his called up and reminded him of a Bartlett technique. This is Richard Bartlett. They both had Bartlett's training course in two-pointing, which is a technique to do this type of thing, of causing these shifts. And he forgot about it, but when she said it, he tried it, and within a couple of minutes, his car stopped having the problems. The gears began shifting correctly, and he made it back to Missouri without any problems, and it's never happened again since then. So, you know, I'm a big believer that, you know, we have this ability to shift these dimensions and change reality in remarkable ways.
Let's go to Roswell, New Mexico, east of the Rockies. Hey, Leonard, go ahead.
Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
That story you were telling about the guy who had that went through that car. I thought you were talking about me. I said I never called the station before.
Same thing,
almost,
huh?
Almost identical thing, yeah.
I mean, when it happened, Leonard, I mean, what did you do? Did you just say, there's no way I should be dead, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, I told the story to people a couple of times, but, you know, they go, oh, yeah, right, you know.
All right, tell us what happened.
Well, I'm 59 now. I just got out of the Army. This is in 73. And so I was whooping up a little bit, you know, and I just bought this old pickup truck. It was a 1950 Ford. And you couldn't downshift it because the transmission wasn't that good. And it was late at night back in New Jersey. They had these long, straight roads. You know, you go for about a quarter or half a mile before you hit a light, and they stay green forever.
Yeah,
night,
oh, yeah.
So I was hauling it down there. I wanted to see how fast this truck would go, you know. So I was a little bit late, you know, so I floored it. And I had the gas pedal all the way down to the floor. And I had that thing probably up to about 90, I'd say. And there was no way I could – you had to use the brakes to stop, you know. And that was a heavy truck. It was 1954. So I'm hauling along, and way down the line there, on the straight road, you know, I could see the green light. It was green, you know, under the road. So I go, I can make that easy. So I'm, you know, I'm hauling, and on the side of the road, this is like about after 2 in the morning, 2, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Pitch black?
Yeah. I was there's no, not too many lights out there, you know.
Yeah.
And so I'm driving along, and I'm hauling, and there's this old Lincoln sitting on the right-hand side of the intersection waiting for the light to change. And this guy jumped the light.
Oh.
And so I'm hauling through there. You know, I was about maybe about half the length of a football field from the intersection. I'm doing about 90, right? And I'm in the – there's two lanes. I was in the fast lane. And the guy pulled out. He jumped the light when it turned amber. He didn't see me coming, I guess.
Oh.
And the last thing I saw – was that guy, he froze and slammed on the brakes right in front of me.
You saw his eyes like a deer in the lights, huh?
Oh, he was staring right at me. He was in shock. Yeah, the last thing I saw was he had both hands frozen on the handle on the steering wheel. He was staring right at me, and I was bearing down right on his door. This is the old kind of the double doors, the suicide doors, the real long old Lincolns. So no way I could do anything, you know? And it's just like the woman just called you said, an instant later, I was on the other side of the intersection. The first thing I did is look in my rearview mirror because I couldn't figure out what happened. I said, you know, I should be dead, you know. I should have wiped everything out, you know.
And he should have been dead, yeah.
Yeah, the car was still sitting there. The guy was still holding onto the steering wheel looking in the direction where I was coming from. And I was still in the fast lane going 90 with my foot on it, with my foot on the gas to the floor, right? That truck wasn't even swerving or nothing. I mean, I was dead on. There was no way you could go around him, you know. This is a long truck, a long car, you know. It's an old Lincoln. And, it was just an instant later. I was just like,
and there was no ramp there. You didn't go over him.
No, it was just an intersection on a, you know, main road back there in New Jersey. You know, until I was living in New Jersey. This is in 73, so you know, and there wasn't a lot of traffic. So you know, and like I said, it was late at night. But I mean, I went right through that car, and that guy was still looking the other way. I mean, I saw the first thing I did. I was looking in the rearview mirror. actually the back of his head. He still has both hands on the steering wheel. The guy was in shock, you know. And
he probably still is, Leonard.
You know? Oh yeah, I mean the thing about it is I was, you know, I was bearing right down on his door. That was the last thing I remembered seeing. And then an instant later, I was like 20 feet away, and he was at the intersection, still barreling along down the lane, you know.
Well, Claude, let me ask you this, based on Leonard's story and the one I told you earlier, and Leonard, thank you. What is it, this is all conjecture on your part, but what is it that allows that to happen? I mean, is it an angelic thing where somebody says, you know, I want to save Leonard and I want to save this other guy in the car? Or are there helpers who say, no, this isn't Leonard's time, so let's get him through this? Or is there something else out there that basically dematerializes these objects? That's what happened. These are physical objects. They collided, but they went through each other. It was almost as if every particle from his car and every particle from the other car somehow didn't touch as they all went through each other.
Yeah, they all become unsynchronized.
Yeah.
They're not synchronized with one another as they normally would be. So something causes them to shift synchronization, so they pass right through.
But why?
I don't know.
It's an honest answer.
I do believe it's spiritual. I do believe it's higher dimensional.
You do think it's spiritual?
I do, yeah. And it's something like what you say, that it was not their time.
I wonder if he willed it. I wonder if Leonard willed it. Or I wonder if the other person in the car had some incredible force belief, he did it.
I believe that people can do that. I believe that there are cases where people are able to will it like that. And who did it, I don't know. But it happens more often than, you know, like this show. I mean, it happens more often than you would think. And if people start looking for these cases, it is amazing how often they come up.
When I was in St. Louis, I must have been 33 years old, okay? A million years ago. I'm driving, and it's got some patches of ice on what we called Highway 4064.
Mm-hmm.
I'm coming from way out in the west. I go up a little hill, and I come down this hill, and we have more patches of ice down there. And all of a sudden, I see maybe five or six cars all turned in different directions. At that time, that highway was just two lanes, one way, two lanes the other way. So there's two lanes on this highway. I'm going down, and there are five or six cars in both these lanes, spaced out. All of them turned the other way. That's how patchy the ice was. A race car driver would have a difficult time maneuvering through that. I tap my brakes a little bit. Not a lot. You can't, because you'll go sliding like crazy, just to try to slow the car down. You know, I'm coming up over this hill, and lo and behold, there's ice, there's cars, everybody's turned around, nobody's going. And I said, I'm going to crash. There's no way I'm going to get out of this one. My car hits a patch of ice. It starts spinning like an ice skater in an Olympic meet. And as God is my judge, Claude, this car spins around all the cars. I mean, it's coming up to hit one. It does a spin.
Uh-huh.
It comes up to the next one, which is more toward the right. It spins to the left, and it just keeps spinning back and forth. It went through all of them and then ended up facing the direction I was going on dry pavement, and off I went. It was a miracle.
Yep.
I don't know who pulled me through it, but something did.
Yeah, I believe that.
You just shake your head. That's all you can do. But it's a story I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And Leonard will never forget.
Yeah.
And the guy who called me 2 years ago, he'll never forget.
Yeah.
I just don't know what does it. And I don't know if science will ever be able to tell us that. Will it?
Yeah. I don't either. But those stories happen a lot. And we have to pay attention to it.
Let's get a quick one out of Tammy in Olean, New York. Go ahead, Tammy. About a minute or so for you.
Hi. I had something similar happen to me about 4 years ago, but it was a little different. I was on my way to work from one location to another, and they didn't know for sure that I was coming there. They called the place that I was and asked if I would soon be getting there. And I'm thinking, okay, I just like called you 5 minutes ago and told you that I was going to be there. And when I arrived there, they were like, oh, we know you were coming. We know you're coming. I'm thinking, I just talked to you like 10 minutes ago. But when I looked at the clock, it had like a half an hour had passed. And I was like, there's no way it took me that long to get there. I'm like, where in the world was I? You know, what happened in between this half an hour? There was no earthly reason for it to have taken me that long. And I've always wondered, like, something bizarre happened in between that time. I've never talked to anybody about this before. I don't know how to explain it. It was like there was, like, no reason for that much of time to have passed before I got there. And I thought, you know, I just talked to you about this. And when I got there, it was like half an hour later, and I never could figure out what happened to that time period.
Missing time that you'll never find again.
Exactly. And I always thought that was like the oddest thing. I could never figure that out. But I've always had this odd thing, like I've never felt like other people think about stuff, you know, before anyway. And I don't know. I just thought it was very strange. And I don't know. This is kind of a little bit different than your other guests have called about, and I don't know if you have anything to say about that.
Where does the missing time go, Claude?
Well, it must go to other people, because I have friends who are shaman and who are mystics who have other experiences. They're all a little bit different from one another, but in some cases, I have a friend who an hour-long trip took her about 4 minutes.
It is truly unbelievable. Claude, thanks for being on the program and your remarkable work once again. His first book was The Synchronized Universe. This one, Life Force. When we come back, we're going to be talking a little bit about sci-fi. Maybe you want to write a script for television. How do you do that? Mark Zakrie joins us next on Coast to Coast AM.